Welcome to the Leadership Lounge, a place to kick back and listen as our experts dissect some of the biggest questions leaders face today. I'm Emma Coombe, Leadership Advisor in our London office. In today's episode, we're talking about how leaders can nail their first year in the CEO seat. It's not easy being a CEO. In fact, it's one of the most challenging roles in business and the loneliest. The scope, gravity, responsibility, accountability, and exposure of the CEO position is unparalleled. Despite its complexity, it's also often hailed as the most rewarding and life-affirming move of your career, a time when you can truly execute your vision and put to use everything you've learned up until now. But to set yourself up for success, how do you approach your first few days and months in the role? What are the common surprises that new CEOs experience? Why is it so important to get your CEO transition right? And what are the risks if you don't? In this episode, we'll be talking to Ty Wiggins, Leadership Advisor in our London office and author of our latest book, The New CEO, Lessons from CEOs on How to Start Well and Perform Quickly, Minus the Common Mistakes. I'm also going to be joined by some of our other trusted leadership advisors who partnered with Ty on the book and who will share their perspectives on how leaders can tackle this daunting new chapter. Before we dive in, remember to share any burning questions you want our experts to answer by emailing redefiners@russellreynolds.com. We look forward to hearing from you. So, let's speak to some of our experts on this fascinating topic. First up, we'd like to welcome Laura Sanderson, Leadership Advisor from Russell Reynolds Associates London office. Laura, welcome to the Leadership Lounge.
Thank you, Emma. Very happy to be here.
Laura, in your conversation with high-profile CEOs, what are some of the common surprises CEOs experience in their first few weeks and months in the role?
It's inevitable that there are going to be some surprises. But until you're in the top seat, experiencing firsthand what the company's like, it's hard to get a read on it. So I would say that the biggest surprises are finding out the true state of the organization and everything that comes along with that. I think another big surprise is that the culture is often different from what was described. You can't get a clear picture of the culture of an organization until you see it for yourself. We know as well the other thing that often comes as a big surprise to new CEOs is the emotional weight they feel once they're in position. Every CEO enters the role knowing that they're going to be responsible for a huge number of people, but the magnitude of the role when you actually take on the responsibility is often still a surprise.
Yeah, I completely identify with what you're saying. And indeed, that plays into what we said earlier about just how lonely this role can feel when you land it. To talk further on this, it's great to welcome back Ty Wiggins, Leadership Advisor in Russell Reynolds' London office and author of The New CEO, Lessons on How to Start Well and Perform Quickly, Minus the Common Mistakes. Ty, welcome back to the lounge. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me back. It's great to be here.
So, Ty, nobody takes on the role of CEO with their eyes closed, yet, as we know, many find the transition incredibly challenging. Why are CEO transitions so hard?
Becoming a CEO is a monumental transition, even for seasoned leaders and for those that have done this before. In the book, we talk about the fact that there's a new CEO out of your comfort zone, exactly at the time everyone is looking to you for answers and for direction. It's incredibly lonely, and that comes up quite a lot. And as you mentioned earlier, Laura, you're carrying a huge weight of responsibility. You're responsible for thousands of employees, for their families, your suppliers, your shareholders. It's a heavy weight that you can't put down. In addition, you're busier than you've ever been, and that can be quite a shock. I love what Lisa McGowan at Pets at Home told us, that before becoming CEO, she thought that it would be 30, maybe 40% harder than being a C-suite leader or a divisional leader. But after around a year, she actually realized it wasn't any percent harder. It was a totally different role.
And one of the issues you mentioned, loneliness, being something that's felt by many CEOs, believed it actually hindered their performance. So, Ty, feeling lonely is something many new leaders face. How can this loneliness manifest?
It's lonely in a number of ways. It's lonely intellectually. You don't have the sparring partners that you previously had being a senior executive. It's lonely in the sense that at any given time, there might be 20 or 30% of things that you can't share, even if you have a very trusted team. It's lonely in candor. You have to be so guarded about how you share your thoughts and ideate. It's lonely emotionally as well. The CEO sharing that they're struggling or having a hard time is not something that we commonly see. Again, in the book, we interviewed Carol Tomei, who's the CEO of UPS, and she made it really clear. She said, when you're a member of the executive team, you hang together. And what she found becoming CEO is that her team would now wait for her to leave a meeting so that they could debrief together. She found that difficult, accepted it was reality, and she had to get used to it, but did acknowledge that it's super lonely.
So what can a CEO do to overcome that feeling of loneliness, Ty?
The first thing is to accept that it's natural. It is incredibly common at the CEO level. And the best way to overcome it is to really build a strong external support network, whether it's past colleagues, other CEOs, mentors, coaches, advisors. You need to have a support network around you.
And indeed, for regular listeners, you will have heard in a recent episode how important a mentor can be for CEOs throughout their career, especially in the first few weeks and months of a CEO transition. We'd like now to welcome Justice O'Brien, Leadership Advisor from Russell Reynolds Associates' Stamford office. Justice, welcome to the Leadership Lounge. We're so excited to hear the advice you have for new leaders.
Thank you, Emma. It's great to be here.
Justice, as a new CEO, there's an immense amount of pressure on you to perform particularly well in the first 12 to 18 months in the role. But why is it so important to get off to a strong start as a CEO? What's the best thing for new leaders to prioritize?
Look, I mean, your first year as a CEO is the most important of your tenure. It's really the opportunity to make your mark. Our contributor, Nancy McKinstry, CEO and chairperson of Wolters Kluwer, likes to say, if you can quickly get to a point of strength, you'll prove your mettle and rise above. If you can't, you may spend the rest of your tenure trying to recover. So it's important to identify your strengths and the strengths of those around you early on, and to know your blind spots and identify the people who can help plug those gaps. You know, probably one of the most important things from the start is to prioritize listening and learning, to be curious, to adopt a learning mindset, to embrace a little bit of what we like to call Socratic humility. And here's the thing. People are much more likely to be open and candid with you in the first few months than later on. So use that to your advantage.
Absolutely. And the quicker a CEO can learn, the quicker they'll be able to perform. To make the best start as a CEO, a comprehensive transition plan is key. What's the benefit of having a well-thought-out CEO transition plan, Laura?
Having a really comprehensive transition plan will provide you with structure and a clear idea of your most important deliverables in your early days as CEO. It really helps you prioritize. And that not only increases the level of confidence you have in yourself, but it also increases the level of confidence that the organization has in you. But it's not just about creating the transition plan. It's also important that you then really effectively communicate that plan. You need to communicate it as early as possible to the chair and the board, and that will help you get the clarity you need on whether you and the board are aligned. Somebody once said that actually the CEO role is really the CRO role, chief repeating officer, repeat and repeat and repeat. But having developed your perfect plan, you've got to remember that things change and no plan should be set in stone because we live in a very fast-paced world. Having beautifully crafted this plan, you're going to then have to be comfortable adjusting it as new events emerge.
And Laura, I think that's a really neat segue into the next topic, which is this point that no CEO will go through the transition unscathed. Things change, the world moves very fast. So Justice, perhaps you could share some thoughts on how you can navigate the inevitable crash.
I think the first thing is to acknowledge that there are no perfect CEOs and there are no perfect transition plans. You are going to be hit with more things than you ever imagined in your first year as a CEO. and more decisions than you've ever had to deal with. You're setting strategy for the company, you're managing financial performance, you're dealing with your new leadership team, you're trying to get off to a good, fast start. And then there are the things that just sort of show up and present themselves in the moment, whether it's a health crisis, COVID, breakthrough technology like AI, or sustainability issues and so on. So there's just so much complexity out there and so many imponderables that you just got to accept the fact that the perfect plan doesn't exist and that you're not going to be able to manage everything seamlessly and flawlessly. You're going to have to be comfortable with admitting mistakes. You have to be willing to be a little vulnerable at times, especially early on in your tenure as CEO. And in truth, that will only, you know, end up turning to your benefit as a leader. Leaders who are unafraid of their imperfections also tend, interestingly, to be among the most innovative, the most resilient, and the best equipped to handle challenges. So I think our guidance there, don't strive for perfection. It will, at the end of the day, it will only trip you up.
Wise words. And making mistakes is part of the job. On this topic, Ty, in the conversations you had with dozens of new in-role CEOs when writing the book, what's the one thing CEOs wish they'd done differently at the start of their tenure?
The reflection that I hear the most from CEOs I work with is that you cannot move quickly enough on your top team. In our recent research, 68% of CEOs said that this was their top transition regret, that they didn't move faster on making changes and building their top team. You know, often CEOs know what changes they should make, but they wait to give the people in the organization more time. And then in hindsight, what this does is create more issues, and it delays both the CEO and the organization from being able to perform. Where CEOs that I speak to and work with are happy with how quickly they moved, they usually work to the following plan. They took the first month to really assess the team. In the second, they decided how the team should be structured and who should be on it. And in the third, they started to make their changes.
So the lesson for new CEOs is don't be afraid to make big decisions quickly when it comes to your top team. But when you are so new to the role, how do you know you're making the right judgment call on your team?
CEOs need to use a combination of assessment and performance data and trusting their instincts. If you don't trust a member of the executive team, that's a big flag and you need to replace them and do it quickly. You won't be able to perform to the level that you hope and to the level that you've promised if you don't have the right people around you.
To turn to a different set of stakeholders, as a new CEO, very few are more important than the board. In our research, the CEOs we interviewed said that they spent 25% of their time with the board or on board-related activities. And for 44% of CEOs, this was more time than they anticipated. For some CEOs, the time spent on board-related activities was so significant that it affected how they chose to allocate their time. So, Justice, on the topic of boards, what do you see as some of the common mistakes new CEOs make when interacting with the board?
I think one of the most common mistakes is the view that he or she needs to somehow or another manage the board. A new CEO would be well reminded that the board is their boss. One of our contributors is the CEO of Whirlpool, Mark Bitzer. And Mark says that no matter what you think and no matter how you feel, you serve the board. And no CEO at the end of the day is bigger than the board. I think another kind of common mistake is avoiding the board. It's just the opposite. You need to make them a priority early on in your tenure. You know, building those personal relationships early on is absolutely critical. Without their support, you're probably going to struggle to succeed. A new CEO really should view his or her board as not some necessary evil, not a governance body, but a strategic asset. I think the new CEO should do everything he or she can do to get the board to contribute in meaningful and substantive ways, especially when it comes to strategy.
So as we near the end of the episode, I wanted to ask each of you, if you could pick one piece of advice that a CEO shared in the book, which would be most valuable to our listeners, what would that be? First of all, Ty, over to you.
That's tough. I would share the parting piece of advice that we got from Ramon Laguarta, CEO of PepsiCo. He said that as a new CEO, you need to be aware that your first 6 months are so important in terms of your success. If you get it right, you build momentum, which will help carry through the changes and initiatives that you need to deliver during the rest of your tenure.
I particularly like the advice that Lisa McGowan, CEO of Pets at Home, shared with us. This is a little bit along the theme of Socratic humility, that Lisa said, you need confidence and courage in your convictions, but you should always have one small part of your brain asking, what if I'm wrong? Hubris can be a dangerous thing.
Absolutely. Ron Williams, a former CEO of Aetna, said something that stuck with me. A CEO should think early and often about his or her end goal. The job is to run the organization effectively, but more importantly, to leave it well positioned for the next CEO. This is something that Ron understood extremely well, the legacy aspect of the role, and it's something that every new CEO should grasp as well.
What a powerful way to end the episode, the importance of leaving a legacy, making sustainable changes for the long term. So our time in the lounge today has come to an end. In 30 seconds, this is what we've learned. CEO transitions are challenging. Know that not every decision you make will be right. Aiming for perfection isn't sustainable and will only slow you down. Surround yourself with an external support network to avoid loneliness taking root. Don't underestimate the amount of time you'll need to dedicate to the board. They're one of your most important stakeholders. And move fast on building your team. Trust your gut and don't be afraid to shake things up. Thank you to all of our guests for joining me today. You can pre-order a copy of The New CEO, Lessons from CEOs on How to Start Well and Perform Quickly, Minus the Common Mistakes, from all major book retailers ahead of its release on May the 7th. And if you have any topics or burning questions you'd like us to cover in future episodes of Leadership Lounge, then get in touch. Email your questions to redefiners@russellreynolds.com. You can find us on LinkedIn and follow us on X at RRA on Leadership. You can also find us on Instagram at Redefiners Podcast. And you can now subscribe to our YouTube channel. Until next time, goodbye.